at the same time, when I try to use it for Spanish, particularly, it is consistently inconsistent to itself with often errors.
What's very interesting is I think we're on the avant-garde, the edge of trying to figure that out, but we're still kind of lost in the swamp a little bit in terms of exactly, you know, how to utilize it responsibly and how to ensure kids know the difference between responsible use and irresponsible use.
Like, you just heard from a student their own internal dialogue that they're engaging with every day. Imagine we had asked that to 20 students and then 20 teachers and some other administrators. Now we're like, oh, that's where kids don't understand why or how they should use it. That's where we need to dig in. They all understand if you just generate it and hand it in, that's cheating. So now we know where the gray area is.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast, where we're going to engage our school community in a discussion on learning in the age of AI, exploring how artificial intelligence intersects with learning, teaching, and trust in our schools. And we're also going to be trying something very new. We're going to be trying a cross episode. So here goes nothing. Fingers are crossed anyway. And I want to introduce the host of the Amped to 11 podcast, Brett Rohr, who will be co-hosting today's episode. And I also want to introduce the people who are here with me today. We have Ava Wu, who's a high school, Briarcliff High School senior. And we have Noah Rinke, also a Briarcliff High School senior. We are joined by Ms. Karen McCarthy, English teacher here at Briarcliff High School, and Mr. Christopher Lowe, who is our computer science teacher here at Briarcliff High School. So Brett, why don't you introduce yourself and take it away with the first question.
Absolutely. First of all, such an honor and a pleasure to be here today. This is our third time coming to Briarcliff. I'm joined by my amazing chief of staff, Hershey Munchie South at Amplify and Elevate Innovation. It's also her birthday, everyone, just so you know that. Not doing everything here. Yeah, clap of applause. We're so excited to be visiting here again. This group of students has been some of the most honest, insightful students when we did our first wisdom collection session here. So we knew it was only a matter of time before we got them on the Amp to 11 podcast. And we're really grateful that we are able to do this in person. So even more exciting to have this great conversation. Thank you again for allowing me to be part of this special crossover episode.
You know, since you're the guest, here in Briarcliff, the co-host guest. Why don't you start with the first question and kick things off?
Absolutely. So again, this amazing school district here in Westchester County, New York, they are so innovative. And when I tell you, like, me and Bersha, when we've come here, we say it's our favorite school we visited because it's just the vibes and the community and just also the way they've renovated their space. So I'm always going to ask these questions. I'd love if the students could start, then the teachers, and then the superintendent. So the first question is, I know why I love coming here, but students, let's start with first, what's right now filling your cup about just being a student coming to school every day? And then staff, same question, and then superintendent, same question. Take it away, y'all.
I think it's a really just a great combination of everything that Briarcliff has. I come in, I for the first 6 hours of my day, I have classes, and it's not just a slog. It's teachers who are genuinely interested in teaching the topics, teaching me things that I genuinely want to learn, in a place where everyone feels really supported. And then in addition to that, after I'm through the classes, I think it lives as a community in addition to a place of learning, from clubs to theater, which is I'm heavily involved in, and all the other activities that, while I don't take advantage of, I have many friends that do. It feels like there's a really great spirit of community and collaboration and just enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. I think one of the best things about Briarcliff is just how supportive everyone is, and that's not necessarily the thing with every school. And I feel like especially the teachers here, they're very good at showing lots of consideration for their students and being there to help them and encourage them. And that's something that I'm super grateful for and I love about Briarcliff.
I agree. Thank you so much, Noah and Ava, for your responses. I actually taught Noah in 10th grade. I have Ava as my editor-in-chief for Briarton Ivy, which is our award-winning literary arts magazine. And I do have to say that they are also just as equally impressive as members of society here. And they are little adults that actually can teach us every day. So Noah was always tech supporting. Ava can figure things out with the technology. They really are so gifted in sharing the knowledge. And so it's like a really symbiotic relationship, I would say, between the teachers and the students. And so it's easy to love you all.
I paid her to say that.
I've also had Noah and Ava in my computer science classes. And what's great about students here at Briarcliff is they just take whatever you throw at them and they will run with it. You know, take on this challenge that I think is like pretty hard. They're like, okay, we'll do it together. And then they just figure things out. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And they often also present things in ways that I never considered, which is always a nice breath of fresh air. So then I take that and think about, okay, what other challenges can I put that will continue pushing their thinking into other fields, other subjects? I like to try to get other subjects involved as well, because I think having context of learning through other subjects is very rich and powerful. Mm. And it just further cements all of the things that we teach them inside the classroom and outside the classroom.
Yeah, and I think just to piggyback on what Chris just said is that learning is not in a vacuum, right? And so because the students are coming from various subjects, they can actually tell us what they're learning in science or history and how that applies to whatever subject matter they're learning with us. And so, it's that benefit of a small community has, those kind of interconnectedness.
Yeah, and what I enjoy, I really enjoy what I guess has been articulated thus far, is this notion of the relationships between students and staff. It's really a beautiful thing to watch. The ebb and flow and the struggle of learning and growing is a really beautiful dance, and I'm blessed to witness it every day. And I too, find myself flipping from educator to student and enjoying every minute of it. And I know it's a cliche to say that, you have great kids, you have great staff, you have a wonderful school community, you're going to really have a high-performing school district. We do really have all of those things coming together. So it's just my privilege just to be a part of it and to witness the great things that happen. Some somewhat expected and some utterly surprising. It's a beautiful dance every day.
Yeah. Well, first of all, something you've all said that we continue to hear about, right, for our M211 listeners and folks listening to this podcast, we always talk about AI and innovation, but you keep hearing humanity is really at the center of education. It's why everyone here says it's what fills their cup about coming every day. The learning is obviously the mission and vision, but the relationships are what allow a community like this and others to thrive. So students, I'm about to ask you to answer a question, and then adults, I'm going to ask you to react to their responses. Sound good? Okay. So something that's been going on in my head lately with middle school and high school students is, right, if they're a school like Briarcliff is empowering students to use AI thoughtfully and when appropriate, I'd love to ask you, I've been toying with this idea of what I call the AI roller coaster. So either of you can start. Eyes are bulging over there for one of our students. Here's what I'd like you to do without obviously naming anyone's names in the school. And describe for me your day, like period 1, 2, 3, 4, like what AI use are you allowed in each class? Or like what messages are you hearing from your teachers? Let's take our listeners on a journey for a current high school student. Either of you can start. Just like period 1, this is what my teacher allows, or this is what they kind of say about it. Period 2. Yeah, just a quick recap for our listeners.
So both me and Noah, we take AP Macro in first period. And I will say one thing that the teacher, Mr. Bordenaro, he's really encouraged about AI is using it to prepare for tests and using it to get multiple choice about the topics we're learning.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that about first period. Then I think it gets into the more nuances, a little more confusing things. Mr. Werner is certainly one of the more clear teachers. Mm-hmm. For example, some teachers, I don't know if it's my second period teacher, me and Ava have a pretty similar class schedule. Miss Alfonso, I don't know if she's laid down any specific ground rules for AI usage, My understanding has always been, if you're not told to use it, generally stay away. Then there goes other teachers where I know, eighth period, this is Gavin, actually provided us with a vetted website to help us review using AI. Mm-hmm. So it really goes up and down with a lot of, I don't know if you disagree, but in the middle periods, there's a lot more uncertainty, a lot more unspecified things.
Yeah, so first and eighth are pretty clear, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the days, we'd love to,
I would just like to talk a little bit about the eighth period AI usage during Spanish. So we had this grammar AI chatbot once where we practiced with grammar usage and they asked us questions and we would have answers. But also, I remember there was an issue with that chatbot where it didn't really give clear or even correct answers to some questions. So it wasn't as helpful a tool as we would have hoped.
A little bit of a tangent here, sorry to build off that, but I have found that across the board, language acquisition, Spanish is one of the least helpful uses of AI. I find in more math, sciencey classes, it's very helpful. I know, I think me and you both use it as a bit of an aid for physics a lot.
Definitely.
And it's very helpful. It's very accurate. And at the same time, when I try to use it for Spanish, particularly, it is consistently inconsistent to itself with often errors.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to turn it over to the adults now. Just what are your thoughts or reactions to hearing that? Any insights that are surfaced from this podcast turned wisdom collection session?
Well, I'm not surprised. I think the goal is to kind of figure out what AI use is happening in different classrooms. And, you know, in one subject versus another, there might be more emphasis on using complex topics and reasoning, which may not be as useful in AI than having something that's more factual based, something that can be repeated often, which AI is much more useful for. So I'm not surprised about it. And in terms of guidance and guidelines, I think if I was a student, I remember back in high school, like, yeah, if a teacher never said anything about it, I would just assume it's not to be used unless, you know, you asked. But I myself, in my class, I have a pretty lax policy with AI use. But in some assignments, I will state, I'll say, you know, I want to limit your AI use for this assignment because the goal of it is not for you to demonstrate to me that you know what you're like, what the facts are. I want to see you do it in person. And I will be spot checking you and asking you questions because I want you to struggle through it. The purpose is to learn to struggle productively and develop your problem solving that way. Whereas we could leave the AI to generating other things that you might spend a lot of time trying to figure things out. But in this specific case, I want to see you try to figure it out yourself.
Amazing. Thank you for that insight.
So I teach a couple of different courses. So in my English 10 Regions class, it depends on the assignment, right? So when they were writing their original myths, absolutely, you can use it to generate pictures for it. In fact, I want to say that Mira Dasvali was the first one to actually ask, like 2 years ago when you guys were in my class, if she can use it. And she asked permission. I said, yes, I guess, because I wasn't even sure. It was the technology has evolved so quickly over the past 2 years when it was first introduced to the way it is today, where it's almost unheard of if you don't use it, right? So, and therein lies the problem is that I don't want them to fall behind with the technologies and live in the Stone Ages, but I also want them to be able to apply skills that they've learned. So in a class like AP Capstone, for example, there is a College Board has issued out a framework for when it's acceptable, when it's not acceptable. And it is on me to explain to the students how to utilize this. And so I spent a lot of time in the beginning of the year going over, yes, that's acceptable. No, this is not. And, you know, because the College Board is a behemoth, there have been situations where a paper has been flagged for AI, even though we have caught it already here and the student has addressed the issue, but it was still an issue that College Board found unacceptable. But here's the other issue with that is that the AI checks are not 100% foolproof. Mm-hmm. And so I've been experimenting with different ones, GPT-0. We have Turnitin. There's 0GPT. I mean, Mr. Low has done a ton of professional development on how to utilize it in a way that the students can benefit from it. And unlike plagiarism, where they actually can see the plagiarism report on Turnitin, let's say, the AI has a disclaimer. This is not 100% foolproof, and the students know that, and they read back to us. So even if we try to have a conversation with them, you know, they pull out the policy and point out the fact that they are owning up to the fact that you can't use this as a 100%. And so there is a lot of gray area, and I think that that's what we're really trying to, it's like a learning curve right now for all of us, students and teachers. And so, you know, but it is definitely something that can be a useful tool. So for example, in AP Capstone, you can't know everything about everything, but they do need to find topics that are relevant, current, and something that they can solve. That's what one of their topics is about, one of their projects. And so it is good to know what is out there. What is the current discussion about? What is the current, feeling on AI use in classrooms? Because it evolves so quickly. But it's really teaching them this is how you write the prompt so that you get the output that you need and not just made up data.
I think Chris Lowe, I'm not surprised at what I'm hearing. Mm. It is evolving, as Karen said. What we do know is that, you know, it can be advantageous and it can be fraught. It is consistently inconsistent, as Noah said. It ebbs and flows in terms of clarity and lack of clarity with regard to what's expected, which is not a surprise because this is a human endeavor. Yep. We're here in schools with people and we're trying to figure this out. And what's very interesting is I think we're on the avant-garde, the edge of trying to figure that out, but we're still kind of lost in the swamp a little bit in terms of exactly, you know, how to utilize it responsibly and how to ensure kids know the difference between responsible use and irresponsible use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many things to unpack there. First, you know, as mentioned by Superintendent, the fact that we're having a podcast right now, I can say that I've been here numerous times with Best Humans, and we've had these kind of open dialogues with their staff, with their students, with their PTA president. Like, everyone is having the right kind of conversations here. So in that regard, I will say you're on the vanguard. And the fact that you're listening and students are able to openly say, yeah, we don't really know what to do in classes, and action is going to be taken as a result. So first of all, I love that we're doing this in person. I don't know why I filmed this in my house normally. This is so much fun. I want to try to recreate the Spider-Man meme where everyone points their fingers at each other. Everyone kind of remember that one?
Yeah.
All right, I'm not dated. All right, cool. So watch this. On the count of three, and if it's multiple stakeholders, you can use two fingers. If it's just one person, in your opinion, based on your role as a student, a teacher, or the superintendent, who's responsible for drafting the policy so kids actually know who should be doing, what can they do in each class, and what's appropriate? And you as a teacher know what's right and wrong about flagging things and other such things. On the count of three, point a finger to the person that you think is responsible for that. One, two, three. Okay, I'm going to let everyone do, if you can't see this in real time, if you're listening in your car. Okay, I got a student. He's pointing to a teacher and the superintendent. The superintendent is making like a circular motion, like woohoo, and basically indicating all of us are part of that solution. Ava, are you pointing at?
I just point to teachers.
The teachers are responsible. Teachers, you don't have enough on your plate. Good. Now you got to also solve AI. And one teacher is pointing directly at the superintendent and his per colleague. Okay. Yeah. And sir, you're just pointing down me. No one should address it.
Everyone.
Okay, everyone. No one, I want to know, pointed at themselves. Interesting. Whoa. But I really want to note that that's really what makes this so circular, right? We haven't laid down these groundworks. And again, just having this conversation and having the luxury that this is being recorded and taking this transcript, this really unsurfaces for a community like this how to move forward. Okay, now we've identified what the uncertainties are. Let's name them and let's come up with common sense solutions as a community. So again, kudos to y'all being ahead of the game here. I would love to turn it over to my co-host for today. What question would you like to ask to this amazing group?
So I guess the question is, how do you actually use AI? And where is the line blurred? You know, if you can come up with a specific crossover or threshold where you're like, okay, I know I can do this, generally speaking, but I'm not really sure across the board when I might be utilizing it to too great a degree or going too far on my utilization of it. Can you articulate what that might look like or where that might be in terms of expectations or assignments?
I think I'll just start off by saying I use AI a lot of the time during physics because I feel like it's a very conceptual class, and AI sort of serves as a second teacher, like a second source of knowledge when I don't really understand what's going on from, Dr. Shen. And I feel like it has really, really been helpful for that and explaining things. But I also know the thing about AI usage is that you need to be able to learn how to do things without relying on AI. And I think when it comes to the actual doing, like solving problem sets and things like that, that's when you need to rely on your own skills. But I think that's where I have the line for myself, but I rely on AI a lot to, you know, like get that information so I can do things, I guess.
Okay. Absolutely agree with all your comments on the second teacher for physics. To more your point of where the blurred line is, I think one thing for me that I found about AI is it's surprisingly good at creative endeavors, like coming up with a catchy title for something I mean, I'll talk in my personal life outside of school. One thing I use it for is Dungeons and Dragons. Actually, I'll use it sometimes to flesh out a location or a character, something like that. And while that's obviously great, it's in the personal life, I find when those creative endeavors start blowing into blending into school, it can become unclear. I remember last year, if you remember our AP English language, we had a satire project where we had to write basically a creative satire. And fortunately, our teacher had very good AI clarifications and guidelines for that. So I was able to navigate that well. But I could see how, you know, a project like that, when I'm trying to be creative, I'm not quite sure how much AI I can use. Can I go to AI and say, write me some topics? Is that okay? Okay. Can I push that further to, hey, AI, can you flesh out these topics a little bit more with a brief outline? And eventually, if I say, hey, AI, you write this whole paper for me, obviously we've crossed the line. But I think without guidance from superiors and from teachers, it's very hard to find where acceptable help ends and plagiarism begins.
And can I ask that same question of the teachers here? So, you know, Karen, Chris, when you guys are utilizing AI in preparation for what you're doing in school, is there a point at which you're like, okay, that's a line I don't want to cross? Is it clear? Is it gray? You know, could you describe that experience?
Yeah, I'll start. So like generating multiple choice questions for a test, I played around with that. And it has generated some pretty convincing problems. But I'm a paranoid person, so I go over every single one of them and verify it myself, to which I discovered, this is too much work. I'm going to create it myself. So, I think there's a difference in if you're preparing a material to teach somebody, it feels like there's a lot more overhead when generating content, when you know that you're using it to help somebody else. But maybe in the guise of a student, if you're doing it for the purpose of completing a task, that might be more of a blur, because if I was a student and I have access to AI in high school, I would probably be tempted to use it just to say I've done it and, you know, it's completed and I can get feedback later instead of using it to really try to work through it. Whereas as a teacher, I can't really escape with that because I'm really making this for somebody else. So I want to make sure that it is verifiable. It is something that I'm teaching them that's factual, that they can understand. And funny, you mentioned Dungeons and Dragons, because outside of school, I also use it for that as well. but it's great. But, you know, when you do storytelling games like that, you also are acting like an improv, right? So I create these little stories and location descriptions, but I have to also rely on myself being able to go off of what that is provided. And then I don't use it anymore because I'm basically just telling the story. So I find that that's okay because it's for the entertainment and everyone's aware that I'm using it. I'm telling them like, hey, I might use this to generate something, but we are all going to play through it and we all are going to contribute and generate the story, you know, naturally from these starting points.
I agree with everything that Krista said. And I just to kind of piggyback off of this whole notion of, yes, we have experimented with using it for our classroom. So whether it's generating a worksheet or a test, I too am a little bit type A and very paranoid as well. And I am not actually happy with any of the output that is generated. And, you know, I don't want to say how old I am, but I've been in this game for 23 years. And so, you know, I've seen that pendulum swing a couple of different ways. And this is just another, it's progress, right? And I'm not going to deny it. I can't be an ostrich in the sand, but I also need to teach myself how to use it. I have to evolve with the students and with the technology. And if I know that my students are using it and I don't know anything about it, that's a problem for me. Because I don't know how they're cheating or I don't know how they're utilizing.
And I would just take that just in terms of our responsibility as educators. It's out there in the world, right? And if our students aren't comfortable with it and don't understand what the benefits and what maybe the shortfalls are with regard to relying upon it,
then we're not. I firmly believe we're doing our students a disservice.
100%.
Because I think those who are really going to be advantaged in this world are people who understand how to incorporate its use in their everyday life, if not their professional lives.
No, 100%. And I can go back to the fact that, you know, before calculators, or we're abacus. So did we put the abacus people out of business? I mean, no. And I remember that my math teacher, when I was in elementary school, oh, you can't, what do you think, you're going to walk around with a calculator in your pocket? Yeah, no, you're funny. I mean, I remember Inspector Gadget. Well, Inspector Gadget, when Penny had that iPad and the watch. And we're living in Inspector Gadget now. We're living the Jetsons life right now. It's actually kind of crazy, right? That they foretold the future and we're living future now. And so if we don't evolve, then we're going to be dinosaurs and we're going to be left in the dust. They also need to be competitive when they're out in the real world.
Very competitive world.
And I have to say that as the Friars and Ivy advisor for Fashion Office, so many years, a long time. I think I've been at this 19 years now. 18 years I've been the advisor. And again, that even has helped in just the creation of product. And you know, Dr. Kation, you've been around just as long as I have.
Maybe a little longer.
So you have seen the evolution of our magazine and what it is today versus what it was 18 years ago. And it's simply because we've evolved with technology. Yeah. And I put the onus back on the students and I take my ego out of it, which is that I am not the smartest person in the room. I'm way slower than they are at the new technologies. They can teach us. And that is going back to that whole symbiotic relationship. It's empowering them to be the experts so that
they can be the teachers.
Yeah. And they are.
Yeah. So a couple of like just incredible insights. I mean, your first, Jim, I'm going to borrow the amazing question you just asked. I want to make sure our listeners really captured that. So I'm really fortunate that I get to make these AI community playbooks around the country. And when you get these listening sessions, if you hear something that's really like a lighting bolt, I just want to amplify and elevate it. So I love the idea that you ask people, where's that gray area for you? Because now, like, instead of saying like, oh, we need to know when kids are cheating or not, et cetera, like you just heard from a student their own internal dialogue that they're engaging with every day. Imagine we had asked that to 20 students and then 20 teachers and some other administrators. Now we're like, oh, that's where kids don't understand why or how they should use it. That's where we need to dig in. They all understand if you just generate it and hand it in, that's cheating. So now we know where the gray area is. Let's dig into that. Let's get uncomfortable with that uncomfortableness. So that's one thing I just want to say. And then I just want to thank everyone really, really articulating. Everyone just shared that based on their own moral compass. So like, you know, Ava, you like explicitly said, well, this is when it feels like I shouldn't use it anymore, right? Like it obviously be cheating. You all kind of had a version of that. That's how everyone is navigating AI. And like, if you didn't think the line was there, or you said, what you mentioned, Chris, Noah said last time he was here, I remember Noah sitting on the other side of the table, and he said, sometimes for his own mental health, he might be studying all day. So for his own mental health, he knows he just needs to turn it in so the teacher sees it and can check the completion by a certain date. Now, again, as our listeners have seen, these are just really upstanding young people, he says, and then I'll go back and learn it later on my own time. But not every student would do that. They might just do that first part. And I know that's what one of the teacher's pain points are. But I just want to attribute that back to you because that was like, you're right. In high school, I would have, without a doubt, on that to preserve whatever sanity I needed or whatever struggles I was going on. If that wasn't the priority, then yeah, we'll figure it out later. Priorities, sports or other activities or other courses. So just want to name that and thank you for that question. Now, I don't know how it works on your podcast, but I'm going to tell you a little tradition we have at our podcast.
All right.
I have two traditions. So hopefully we get to both. We'll start with the first one. My favorite part of the episode, and you're ready for this, is we reverse the mics. We've been asking all the questions. We got brilliance right here. We got two students. We got two teachers. They get to ask their superintendent and this random guy who's in their conference room anything they want about AI and education. Good luck.
Here we go.
Anyone can start. Especially the student.
I guess I'll start off.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Go get it, Noah.
We've talked a lot about where we are right now with this technology that's constantly evolving. When AI becomes a new iPhone, when it becomes a new 20, 30, 10 years from now, where do you think you will be? How do you envision that evolving?
Well, I think, wow, that's a huge question. I'm hoping it will be a force for good 10 years from now. I'm not suggesting it's not necessarily a force for good right now, but as this discussion has revealed, we're struggling to kind of figure out and understand really what it is, what its benefits are and what its shortfalls are. But I do think the first step in that long in that longer journey is to take a look at just next year and be able to say, okay, what are the expectations? What are the guidelines? And what are the seminal understandings that we have about its use? The thing that makes me the most uncomfortable about this conversation is I'm sitting next to students and staff, whom technically I'm responsible for, right? Superintendent of schools. And you're all telling me that you have uncomfortabilities and you don't have answers about those uncomfortabilities, right? So how can we clarify that so that we can really go at this as a school community, not just as a superintendent or an expert in the field or teachers from a restrictive perspective, but how can we go at this as it's an opportunity for us to engage together and come up with a Briarcliff solution for a problem that's affecting our school community? And so the first step will be there'll be clarity with regard to, you know, what is responsible. The next thing is that we are going to understand the difference between authenticity and machine generated whatever. Right. And so I want to make sure that students are literate and they have an understanding of information technologies that are out there, including AI, so that they can recognize for themselves when, you know, maybe something is given very little care and or whether they're the subject of some predatory commercialized entity or whether they're being manipulated in some way, so that there really is an honest dialogue around what really is important, whether it's in the classroom or whether it's in the real world. In 10 years from now, you are going to be the CEO of a great company. Ava, I'm not sure. Maybe first
sure
chair.
Anything she wants.
Anything,
honestly.
Both of you, anything you want. First chair at the Met. I'm not sure where we're going to be, right? Maybe a Nobel Peace Prize winner. I'm not sure.
Head of the United
in physics. Nations. Yes, head of the United Nations, right?
President of the United States.
There we go.
Yeah.
10 years from now is a long time. I'm going to say I'm not sure what the school's responsibility is going to be, but I know it's going to be a journey that's going to start with taking one step at a time. And you can't. There's no there. There's no final destination.
Just to piggyback off that, you said you're going to try to find more clarity and step into that. Just how soon do you see, like, guidelines for AI for both teachers and students? And are there any specific guidelines you already feel that you're going to put?
Oh, I told you.
She nailed it.
This is awesome. This is the best podcast we've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, Ava, the amazing thing is we started last year and created a document that we said, okay, this is going to cover. Now, it is admittedly sort of, we started with a document to guide this year. It was obviously open-ended because there's a lot of uncertainty with regard to AI. But we did say two things: that we wanted teachers to use it, we expect that students will use it, and we want teachers to be able to expose students in responsible ways to the use of AI so they understand its merits and its shortcomings, right? So we did that. That's hardly satisfying, Ava, clearly. Right. So I think what's the next iteration? And I think the next iteration is, okay, now that we're a little bit wiser, now that we have great student faculty input, and now that we get the help of outside experts and the superintendent is all over this thing, what's the next iteration of those guidelines? And I don't know the answer. I think the goal is to try to come up with, a document and then float that around and get our school community to weigh in on that. And that's part of why these conversations are so insightful.
So, all right, if we're talking about different demographics here, right? Mm-hmm. So as the superintendent of the school district, how do you think you're going to get everyone to buy into this notion? Because we do have people of different generations. Mm-hmm. We have empty nesters who still vote on school budgets and, mm-hmm. you know, but we also have Todd Elementary School students who are not only equipped with technology, iPads, and the coding. How do we get everyone to buy into this vision of yours?
If I may just add a little bit to that question. Sorry. One thing I've noticed a lot about AI is there's not only pushback ethically and morally about cutting plagiarism and the like, but there's a variety of other concerns. Think environmental. Think plagiarism, not of your own work, but of the work that AI might be training on.
Images.
So in addition to making a plan that works for the best school output with while still ensuring good education and good community. Do you have any thoughts on how such a policy might address the other concerns of groups?
Yeah, so I don't have the answers to the questions, but I think fundamentally that's what a policy needs to do. It certainly needs to protect intellectual property. It needs to ensure that we're engaging safely with AI and with the products that AI can put out. Again, a lot of it's determined by the intent of the user. Unfortunately, you know, we have to make sure that we are in line in terms of what the expectations are. So how do you get buy-in? I don't expect that we're ever going to get to a place where every teacher is going to utilize AI for the same reasons. And I assume your question was about the faculty specifically. Right? And we have English teachers. I was an English teacher. We have computer science teachers who maybe have more sophisticated understanding and degree and fluidity with regard to technologies like this. And then you have your Luddites, right? I consider myself one of the latter. So how do we create guidelines that allows for flexibility and individually in the classroom, yet we understand that we are all part of a system that needs to do two things. It needs to expose students to AI so they understand and recognize when they're subject to it or how to utilize it in ways that are responsible. And we have to create flexibility so people can approach it in ways that are advantageous to themselves, right? And so that's going to be different for different teachers. We can stereotype our English departments and places like that. Sure. But there are some, we have some, but it's not, that would be doing a disservice to teachers because we have some extraordinarily nimble people with AI across the academic spectrum. It's about being prepared, knowing that those dangers are out there. Hopefully, if we're graduating a more literate group of students with regard to the pros, the cons, the benefits, the dangers, then you'll be able to better protect yourselves. Because once you're gone, it's all going to be up to you.
Well, if I can just one more add-on, since
now we'll get Kristen.
Has inspired me here. So one, all right, dystopian view of AI is that one day it will replace all teachers. There will be no jobs for teachers anymore because all they need to do is really sit in a classroom and have a monitor, if you will, but the AI will then be the teacher. Do you see that as, okay.
No, not at all. And I think the human connection is incredibly important. Can I envision an AI-generated sort of graduate am I in favor of? No. But can I envision like at the graduate level or postgraduate level? You know, yeah, I can see online. I've engaged in online coursework where there isn't a person. Somebody's created it. Mm-hmm. Could AI do that? Yeah, I think AI could do that. Mm-hmm. That well, I would hope somebody's making sure that, you know, it's not sending me some, you know, information or answers or topics that are off base. But no, I don't. And what this entire, we've recently gone through a huge experiment that kind of prepared us well. That was the COVID epidemic,
yes.
Right? And I think we did exceedingly well as a school district during that time. And I still would qualify that time period as an abject failure for kids and families, right?
Yeah.
And there are lots of reasons for that. I think we did the best that we could. And I think, you know, we kept students engaged. We never closed as a school district. That's all really amazing things to say, but it was still incredibly dissatisfying. And I still see the impact on students today. Not so much these two. They got through it resiliently. But I see that impact. So that question has been answered. This notion of a trusted adult guiding kids through their K-12 journey or, you know, before they hit 18, before they become enlightened adults, maybe 21, 25, whatever the science is saying. I think it's really important to have a caring teacher in the classroom. I agree.
Chris, what are your thoughts on all this?
So I have a question.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
To both hosts.
Okay.
And this is a question I'm going to go a little bit off tangent on.
Sure.
So as both of you who interact with other schools, is there a prevailing atmosphere about AI use in schools? If there isn't, what trends might you see happening about AI use in schools?
First of all, well done. That's yours, really. You were saving those. Okay. first, I just want to give some flowers to who's in the room here. One, like, there was a moment where I was just smiling so widely, because for all our teachers out there, imagine when you're like teaching that perfect class and there's a really good classroom debate and discussion going on. That's really what it just felt like in here. So it was just really a wonder to see. The other thing, I just want to give some credit to you, Karen, right? So you said something just now that is a trend. Like, what if we get it wrong, right? What you just described is the worst version. And I know it's for two reasons. One, what did each of you say is the reason you like coming to school? The people, the Karen, yeah, this amazing community.
Karen, so let's reinvent that.
No, we're not bringing that back. So just think about that for a second. Like, one, if that happens, we failed, right? And I don't think it will happen as drastically as you said, but it might have some impacts on the emotional side of education. But the other thing that you all, I want to give credit here, right? So Jim keeps saying we have an AI expert here, but like none of us are, and all of us are. And here's how I know. Because you all are asking, like, what should the rules be? If you all sat down like this and I just recorded this and shared with you, I bet you would find almost most people, you were asking, like, does everyone agree? Not everyone at this table agrees about probably any of the policies in the school. It doesn't have to be agreement. It has to be understanding and consensus that we all had input in staking it. So if we just found, like, the middle line between the five of you and I said, what should the policy be? And you all looked at it and you're like, I don't love it, but it's good enough. Like, that's all you need to get to. So I just want you to know, like, you all, just asking the right questions to you, you would be able to build your own AI policy. So I just want to give you some credit there. So what's happening here is not the prevailing trend in education. This is what I wish would happen, is that people would honestly just open their door and do what we're doing now, and in 45 minutes, be able to probably put something out that's based on your values. Say, now just give us input on this. How far off are we on the barometer? And here's a couple of use cases or scenarios. That's really it. So, like, that's moving. And I want to give some shout outs to, there's some great ESCs in Indiana, some that live by Pat Haney, Shannon Cox at Montgomery County ESC. There's some really great IUs in Pennsylvania, and right here in BOCES, Jen Wilson. There's people who are trying to do this. Just find common sense, not try to top down it or the finger pointing, what we had here. Just bring everyone together and talk through a few scenarios, and what you show people, the middle will agree with. You're always going to have outliers, and then just, you got to incorporate that too. You have to acknowledge it, even if that's not the ultimate direction you go. That's the trend that I'm trying to find more of, because it's not as hard as we're making it. We have all the, like, once new research comes out that you shouldn't have kids under this age do it, or this is where learning takes place and where it doesn't, yeah, just keep using AI and refining and saying, based on the latest research, we're making this decision. That's it. I really just wanted to expand on that just to get Jim off the hot seat, because you all gave us some advice. But that's honestly what I see as the biggest trend that I wish was happening more. And once we understand who can use it, when they can use it, why they can use it, and how they can use it, you've come up with these answers a million times for every other thing that revolves around education. You'll all be able to do this.
And I can only say, and thank you for giving the context that you find this district in, because I don't know that I could do that objectively. but, you know, I'm a little concerned about the fact that I can't go in my typical circles and get answers to questions, or even have a dialogue such that we're having here about, you know, where do we need to go, and how do we ensure that whatever policy we adopt, that it works for this school community. I see a very traditional sort of approach to this, to lock it down, make sure it's safe, make sure, you know, software that can detect it, and over-reliance on that to some degree. And then I also worry about those who are sort of ignoring the reality that regardless of what policies you have in place, you have kids using it. Period, full stop. And if you're not having a conversation about that, maybe they don't even recognize when that line is getting blurred, or when they're not learning something, or when they're not benefiting from its utilization, if not being harmed by it. And I think that's the concern that I see with regard to the appreciation that it is a reality that we're going to graduate our kids into, so we have to grab it.
I actually try to see this as like a metaphor, right? So I really kind of think about like Mercedes-Benz. That's where I actually started off my career. And they were always at the forefront. They were the pioneers and they were the innovators. They were the first ones to come out with these safety technologies. And because they were always the pioneers, they also had to take the brunt of these are the mistakes that we learn that the Toyotas and the Hondas can borrow. They are the ones who sit back and then they wait for the pioneers to do the dirty work. And then they disapprove upon it. And so to me, I see us as the Mercedes-Benz of education, so to speak, the innovators, the pioneers, if you will, the forefront of education. And, you know, I think that credit to you for always being so willing to let us experiment and supporting us in our endeavors and trying new things. I mean, really, there is no limit here at this school district. Like, if you dream it, it can happen. And I think that really, that's why I don't dread coming to work. I really can't wait to get to work every morning, because it's like, what new thing can we create today? You know, we're always evolving, always learning. The Mercedes Benz.
That's a good branding title. Chris, one thing I want to just add on what you just said. You said, because we're outside of the district, like I'm outside the district, what am I seeing when I go to other places, right? But I hope you're really taking one thing away from this, listeners, and also this community, is that, like, I'm continually urging you, don't look outside, look inside. All I needed to say was, go get two pizzas and let's record your kids. And everyone in the room found that very insightful, but it was turning it inward, not outward. You can always, literally, any AI tool now could just take whatever frameworks you think or you're comfortable with and all your board policy. But what they can't do, AI, is interview you and take that wisdom and make it meaningful and valuable. And that's the difference. So I hope everyone heard that part. And Chris, thank you for, like, that was a great question. Obviously. So thank you for raising that. I keep looking at my phone because I want to make sure we get out of here on time. Some people have, what period is that? Fifth period?
Sixth
period. Oh my gosh, I got that quiz I got to study for. So we're going to get you out on this. One thing we like to do on the M211 podcast, and I'm sure this is something that you also recognize as important, is giving flowers, right? So we always like to ask people, talk good about somebody behind their back, right? If you, the people that are either currently supporting you, it doesn't have to be people in this room, but like, who should people out there know are doing something really incredible? It could be your family, could be your classmate, a student, whoever in your life that people should know about because they're doing something really meaningful in either education or just having a great effect on the world. Anyone can start.
I think I briefly mentioned them tangentially a little bit earlier, but my 11th grade English teacher, Miss Mandel, I think that was, for me though, I was there in 10th grade. AI wasn't as huge as important as it was. So I really started last year, first English class. And my wife, as you mentioned, give her flowers for just doing such a great job. We had, I believe, at least a period and a half of, here's what I'm using for AI. Here's what you were allowed to use AI with specific examples, class discussions. And I think, as I mentioned, when I later went into a project where I wasn't sure where the line was, I was able to draw back on that and really feel much more confident with how I was using it and how I was navigating these issues.
I'm going to shout out Chris Lowe right here next to me, because he really is at the forefront himself. He's always learning and he's always teaching himself, and he's so generous with his knowledge. And I am a little bit older than he is. And so what I kind of wander over and say, hey, Chris, can you explain to me what this means? I don't understand. This is Greek to me. He is able to explain it in a very accessible way so that I do not feel old and dinosaur-y, but it very knowledge, and you know, you fill my cup with knowledge, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
That's really sweet. Wow.
Well, I do like to give flowers to everyone. I know that's a cop out answer, but honestly, I do feel like, you know, I work in an amazing district, and with everything that's going on in the world, this is like the best place to be for trying to, you know, develop yourself and find support with not only your faculty, but your staff and your students. And there's just so much warmth, not from the HVAC, but.
Oh, HVAC burn.
You can come to my class.
Those were the flowers. Classic.
But from everybody, you know, it's the atmosphere here is just so open. And you can see that in the discussions we have and in the policies we try to create. We want to create a culture of understanding and productive struggle. And that comes in so many different forms, but knowing that we're all in this together, I think it's just something very special I don't see very often outside. So I'd like to, if I could, offer a bouquet to every single person.
Okay. Well, first, Karen already, you know, gave you some flowers. I'm going to give you some flowers because, again, not just yourself, but everyone so far. AI can't replace all of the feelings you just mentioned. And also, I want to push people, AI could complement or give you more of that if there's ways for AI things that are time consuming for you. It could be the reason you have even more of that time and feeling, not just you, but others. So I just wanted you to thank you for sharing that. It really is about the community yet again. So just thank you for those words of wisdom.
I would like to give my flowers to all the students in the school who have a strong moral code against AI. And I feel like that's difficult, especially because so many people in the school are using AI for basically everything. And I feel like it's really difficult to be one of those people who has this moral compass where you won't use AI for like specific things or basically anything at all because you feel that it's wrong. And I would also like to give a shout out to my old Taekwondo master instructor because she was someone who really stood up for her beliefs. She's a writer also, and she really believe that using AI is not good. And I think that's just really admirable that she is able to stick to her beliefs in a time where everyone's using AI.
Could you say their name one more time, please?
Savannah Glab.
Thank you for that shout out. Also, I want to make sure one other thing that surfaced in this room a few months ago was that contrast or that dichotomy of like, you have clearly stated your moral code and beliefs around AI. Students here were really struggling, and other students we're talking to about like, I know I shouldn't be using it, but others are. And like, especially if that teacher is, you know, ignorant to that, you are trying to authentically learn and produce at a masterful level, and they can easily do that now. And the advantages of the time and et cetera. That was really raised here a few months back where like, that's what students are dealing with. That's a really big internal conflict to know like, no one has a rule, so therefore I have to judge myself. But if I fall behind because of that, did I make the right moral choice? Like, that's what students are literally used to encapsulate. So I just want to say thank you for raising them and for giving great flowers out. Last but not least.
So I guess I'm going to go back to my first year of teaching, and I had a student, Sharar Sharif, I believe his last name was. It was a long time ago. But he's a student who came up to me one day and said, thank you for recognizing that I needed something different than everyone else needed in my classroom. I think he was referring to was the fact that before I understood even what it was, that I was differentiating my approach in the classroom based on, you know, what students were presenting me as prior knowledge. So this is a kid who was really bright and somehow wound up in a new school in a class. Just to give you a sense of how far things have come, I was teaching in the Bronx, and there were 16 sections in this eighth grade cohort that I was with, and they were ranked by their ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in as a young teacher to be told that these are the worst of the worst, and these are the, you know, so I went in bracing myself for what I had been told, only to find the beauty and the magic in everybody who's in the classroom. Although I had some trying times, don't get me wrong. But then for that to be recognized and articulated to me at a time when it would have been a lot easier for me to take the advice of other people and just, you know, just do one generic lesson plan and just get through the day and survive till the next. So that's been an inspiration to me ever since. And I shudder to think about how much I had to learn that first year. And I'm grateful that my journey has led me here.
It's very poignant. And, you know, that's one of the things maybe we get away with AI. We need to do a little less experimenting on, you know, for example, the most vulnerable parts of the population, students, you know, medical field. So hopefully we get it right. And, you know, you have a little less damage done as a first year teacher, which we've all been through. Well, I'm going to close this out with some flowers. I'm going to give it to someone who's just off camera over there, our birthday girl in the room, Chief of Staff, Hersha Munchy South. Not only is it her birthday, and that's one reason I'm calling her out, but I'm just so honored. Like, me and Hersha have known each other for a few years, and I have no idea what I'm doing every day, right? I'm trying to help have an impact in education, but I don't literally know how or why sometimes is the best use of my day. And that's a really big difference when you're not like in a classroom or in a school setting or in a building level. So to have someone who acknowledges that is one of the most funny and practical people about how to kind of get me back on track or task, which really good classroom management skill. Much appreciate that. And I'm just so honored that I have someone who just cares so deeply about some of the misjustices in education and society. She wants to put her values forth. She wants to learn. She's constantly trying to learn something new to make sense of the chaos that is the work we do and just the state of education and society. So just a major bouquet of flowers, and to her family, Zuzu, Erin, spoil this lady rotten on her birthday today. And I just want to thank you all. This was I wish all the podcasts were in person, because to feel your energy just made this such an enjoyable experience. And just thank you, Jim, for letting me be a guest on your podcast and for just creating a space where this even exists. It should be in every school. It should be a right, but it is not. It is the exception.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all your help with the district as well. And thank you to our students. Thank you to our teachers. You guys are amazing today. Thank you. Thank you for putting me in the hot seat. I hope I answered your questions well. This has really been an enjoyable experience, but a very informative one. So thank you.
And we still got 3 minutes till period six. We did it.
Right.
All right. Let's go.
Oh, don't forget your swag.
Oh, yeah. They have t-shirts. So for our AMP211 community, we don't have them yet, but we should. And can you just say one more time, just like, how can people learn more about the amazing work you're leading at Briarcliff? And how can they learn more about where to find your podcast?
Yeah. So my podcast is Supercast. It can be located on Spotify or anywhere you get your podcast from. So Supercast with a K. We engage in interesting conversations with interesting people around the district and around the region. So it's really been a wonderful opportunity. So tune in. This is a great episode. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brett.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great day, everybody.